Good morning. 6:36 a.m., August 2nd, and I forgot Ishmael Wong's birthday yesterday. Oh, bummer. I didn't even remember it until somebody wrote to wish him a happy birthday and put it on my timeline on Facebook. It's like, oh, perfect chance to make a blog post. Dumbass. Anyway, let's see. I'm late. I got tied up online this morning. Fooling around. I got most of the backup, the makeup audio work, the emergency work done. Ooh, I'm cranking this morning. 1 mile, 17 minutes. And that's the slow mile because I had to stop and take a picture. So, yeah, moving right along this morning. Let's see. I'm still getting edits, still making edits. The feedback is very good. And I need to get this book out. It's okay. I'd rather have it right than fast. We're talking only a matter of a few days, so it's not really that big a deal. And at some point I'm gonna have to stop and go back and check out Ravenwood again, because I know I've got bad covers on at least some of the files. I have to go get them and fix the covers on all of the places where it lives. So that's cool. And then I got to order a case of each of the two books so that I'll have copies to sign. I'm talking and not walking. That's not a good sign. One of the problems I'm having this morning is pain. The truth is, I forgot to take my pills last night. I even got two reminders, and still forgot to take my pills. It's like, oh yeah, I have to take my pills, and then forgot. So as a result, I've been up for 3.5 hours now, almost. I've been up since about 3:30, and my head is still killing me. I took one of the anti-inflammatories early, like 4 o'clock, when I realized that, oh, you dummy, you didn't take your pills last night. So I'm hoping that that's going to kick in here eventually. It usually does. It usually takes a couple of hours for it to work. And I'm probably going to have to take a nap just because it makes me drowsy. Ouch. So yeah, I'm not talking much today. Sorry. I have been thinking, my little brain has been working overtime, thinking about Odin's Outpost stories, when I should be thinking about Ravenwood and the Hermit of Lammas Wood stories, but, or Ishmael Wong stories, or anything. However, one of the books that has wandered across my inbox lately is an old book from the 30s, De Montfried's Adventures of a Red Sea Smuggler. And it's got me thinking about, there is an interesting idea. There is an interesting notion. The autobiography of a fictional deep space smuggler. What did I say? De Montgrief? I think it's De Montfried. I don't remember what I said. My ears weren't listening to my mouth, and my brain was moving too fast for me to hear. So, De Montfried. Gilbert De Montfried? I think so. It's a book that I read a long, long time ago. It was before I went into the Coast Guard, so it was before 1970. So 30-something years ago, I read this book. And I remember it. It's a 30s-era story. It hasn't really aged well, I don't think. Although I don't know, all I have is vague memories of it, of a time when I read it when I was much younger. And perhaps not quite as discerning as I might be now. I might have to read it again. If it were available in an ebook, I probably would, but it's not. Well, what am I reading now? I think I mentioned BookBub. BookBub.org is a good place to find new reads. They send an email every day for me for the genres that I'm interested in. And I got I don't remember the name of it now. Double Trouble? I wonder if I can look without interrupting the recording. I'm not going to risk it. That's pretty interesting. It's pretty good. The Francis Pauli, P-A-U-L-I, books, the Dimensional Shift and Aspect Ratio. Those two were very cute. I like them a great deal. They fall technically, I suppose, into science fiction romance, although the romance aspect of it is really quite small. The science fiction aspect of it, of the parallel universes, an onion model of parallel universes, where the further you go from where you are, the less alike the universes become. So adjacent universes, of course, aren't very much different, but if you slip over 5 or 6 or 10 timelines, then they become quite different. So it's kind of interesting. And Frances does it very well. I have to say that her use of this idea, this genre trope of parallel universes is quite delightfully done. There's some questions still left. There are some alien artifacts that she doesn't explain, but periodically do odd things. So that's kind of cool. There's a certain randomness built into the devices themselves. And her voice is just, it is so quintessentially Canadian. It's gorgeous. It's lovely. It's one of those things that I particularly like to listen to, different authors' voices and how they phrase. Now, I have to say, drag, drug doesn't work for me as verb conjugation. It just, no. Dragged. Was dragged, has dragged, will be dragged. And she's really big on having your feet drug across the floor. It's like, you know, I can do that. It's okay for okay. I was going to say it's okay for dialogue, but in narration it's a little off-putting. The other side of that is this is a first-person narrative. So using the words that that person would use in dialogue in the narration would be actually consistent. I have to go back and look at that to see if that's exactly, because I'm sure that's how it works. I don't know if she ever established that. I thought at one point that it was her subtle way of establishing that the timeline we were reading about was not our timeline. It was a timeline where irregular verbs were more commonly used, which would be an interesting idea. It's one of those little writer thingies that I'm constantly thinking about. It's like, how do you provide? The challenge with that is, how do you keep it from looking like a typo? And I have one line in Zephyria's Call, where after several shots of rum to kill the pain, Tanis starts making verbal errors, and one of the errors is bandages. And pretty much every copywriter said, yeah, I know what you think, I know what you're saying here, I realize what you're doing here, but I'm not sure others will, and they'll ding you on this for a typo. And you know, and I looked at that and I thought, really? Four shots of rum and I spell bandages in dialogue, and you don't think the average reader will get it? Good morning. And I suppose the point would be that it's not the average reader that's the problem. The average reader isn't going to even care. It's the person who wants to find something to hate in the book in order to leave a bad review. And while it galls me to have to write this way, it's the nature of the beast. So I had her slur the S on the word before, so it's supposed to be soggy bandages, but it comes out shoggy bandages. That's a little better. It's sort of like hanging a lantern on it. It's going to be clearer that that's not an isolated typo, because the repeated ES is deliberate. And by making the word before it slurred, it just makes it clear that it was deliberate. No, it's not a typo, you anal retentive typo twits. So anyway, yesterday I talked about Ewan Morrison's article in The Guardian. I went back and read more of it today. He and Conrath are having at it hammer and tong. It's amusing on one level. On another level, it's seriously, we don't have enough to do without engaging in this kind of ridiculousness. The argument is interesting in that I haven't heard anybody say we have to support bookstores in a long, long time. It used to be, oh well, see, this ebook thing, we really have to be careful about what happens with ebooks, because the ebooks are going to push out brick and mortar bookstores, and without brick and mortar bookstores, how will we discover new things to read? Well, that on itself, that might make a good post. That by itself is kind of a stupid argument. Because you can only discover in a bookstore what is in the bookstore. And the bookstore doesn't stock even everything that the mainstream press stocks. It doesn't stock only those things that it thinks it can sell in its market. So discovery in a bookstore is slightly less effective than a crapshoot. You'd have more luck going to Barnes & Noble and typing in a name at random to get something that you might enjoy reading, I think. But I digress. So this idea that we have to support publishers because without publishers supporting authors, then authors would not be able to find markets for their books, which is arguably a flawed assumption to begin with, because there are a lot of people who aren't. But the cultural, one of the arguments was that the cultural milieu, for lack of a better term, an institution might pass. And it's like, well, yeah, buggy whips as an institution kind of went by the boards too. It didn't have quite the same tenure as book publishing has, but I don't hear anybody really whining that we really need to go back to horse and buggy, because we need buggy whips and we need to cover the roads with horse manure or something. So I don't know, that's an interesting argument. But the big one was that so few people make any money at all in self-publishing, particularly in ebooks. And his argument goes back to the last British data that he has, the most current, that was a survey of 25,000 professional British writers, UK writers, 25,000 writers from the United Kingdom. And the numbers there really don't uphold his assessment. The mean is about $25,000 a year. It was expressed in pounds, but it's about between £14,000 to £16,000 a year, which was poverty level, but that was the average. Averages are always problematic, so I really like to see what the distribution is, because according to one survey, the average indie writer makes $500 a year. And I'm sure that's true. But the problem is that of the 25,000 British professional authors that they surveyed, they didn't survey the several million people, I'm assuming, I don't know, since only 1 in 100 titles gets through a slush pile. There must be 100 times more people who don't get anything because they just can't get through the gate. So, anyway, of the 25,000, 60% of them, 60% of the revenue goes to 10% of them. And only 20% of them make all or most of their income from writing. 60% of them require a second job in order to continue to write. Which isn't, you know, that's not bad. But it's certainly not the halcyon picture of economic success that this guy is painting. So I'm not quite sure how to take it. It's an interesting argument, and one basically bankrupt. 18 minutes, 16 seconds lap time. I guess my second mile was actually slower. At any rate, I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day. I'll try not to talk about Ewan Morrison, but I will talk to you then.